What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Katie Halper Show. Here's an interview I did with Ryan Grimm. And at the end of the interview, you will hear that I received a text about a then-breaking story from journalist Rich McHugh. So I'm releasing this Ryan interview. Then later, I'll be releasing the Rich McHugh interview. And then later, the latest interview I did with Tara's friend, Linda Lacoste, who remembers Tara telling her about the assault a few years later after it occurred when they were neighbors. So stand by for those, but here's the Ryan interview. Hello and welcome to the Katie Halper Show. I'm your host, Katie Halper. Very excited to be talking to our guest today, who is Ryan Grimm, a journalist at The Intercept. He broke the Christine Blasey Ford story at The Intercept. He also broke the Tara Reid story at The Intercept. And on the previous episode of The Katie Halper Show, we talked about the differences between those stories and the differences in the way people responded to it. He's here to talk about the latest development in that story. So welcome, Ryan. Thanks for joining us. Can you tell us what the latest is in the Tara Reid story?
The latest is confirmation of a claim that she had made to you and also to me and perhaps some others over the course of our reporting on this story. She had said that sometime in the 1990s, her mother called the Larry King Show and said that her daughter had worked for a prominent senator, had been, sexually harassed and retaliated against. And, what advice would the panel have, for someone in that situation, something to that effect. And so, we went looking for this call, but it was difficult through the different mechanisms that we used to search because Larry King doesn't name the callers. She told us that she would have been living in California at the time. So, that doesn't narrow it down terribly much. Right. She was living in San Luis Obispo County, which did end up helping to narrow it down further. But it wasn't until after I mentioned the call on your show that a listener went and searched it using a process that I hadn't thought of, which is Nexus Transcripts. And I was kicking myself because I didn't think that transcripts of the Larry King Show went back to the early 1990s in Nexus. Now I know that. And, we were able to quickly, search Nexus ourselves and confirm that she had found the right episode. And so it's a woman from San Luis Obispo calling in August 1993, the year and the month that Tara Reid left Joe Biden's right. office, saying, "My daughter just left a prominent senator's office. She was unable to get through with her problems. And what can she do other than go to the press?" Both her brother and Tara Reid herself have said that sounds like our mother's voice. And right. it's inconceivable to me that it could be anybody but her mother. The coincidence would have to be just too extraordinary.
Right.
San Luis Obispo, California. Hello.
Yes, hello. I'm wondering what a staffer would do besides go to the press in Washington. My daughter has just left there after working for a prominent senator and could not get through with her problems at all. And the only thing she could have done was go to the press, and she chose not to do it out of respect for him.
Or she had a story to tell, but out of respect for the person she worked for, she didn't tell it.
That's true.
What is the significance of that video? Because a lot of people are saying, okay, well, what does that prove? She didn't mention the harassment, certainly didn't mention the sexual assault. This doesn't prove anything.
So, sure, we could be clear about what it doesn't prove first. Even if she had said, my daughter was assaulted by a prominent senator and I urged her to go to the police, that still wouldn't prove that it happened.
Sure.
It would prove that Tara had told her that that had happened at the time. So the question of the call comes down to, what can it confirm? The only thing it can confirm is, what did Tara Reid tell other people at the time? We can know what she told her friend and what she told her brother, because we can speak to them. Her mother passed away in 2016, so we can't ask her. So the only thing she has to verify her claim that she told her mother about this is, actually her brother and her friend confirm it. Her brother remembers talking to her mother about it, and her mother being up in arms, suggesting she should go to the police. And her friend recalls, also recalls her mother being involved. So there's those pieces of evidence. But now we do have this contemporaneous piece of evidence that her mother and her talked about something that happened at the office.
Right.
That was bad enough that the press in 1993 would care about it.
Right.
And so you have to ask yourself, what level, if you believe that she's only referring to harassment there, what level of harassment are we talking about that the press would care about in 1993? Now, you could also say, she knew at this point that Tara did not want to go public.
Right.
And so she's already kind of breaking with her daughter a little bit. And this is appears to be within her mother's character. She was a feminist activist, a longtime left-wing activist,
right.
Somebody who cared deeply about the world and standing up for yourself her entire life. And so, she wanted Tara to push forward with this. Tara didn't want to. So she knows she's going further than Tara wants. And she probably also knows that if she says police on national television, that her daughter just left a prominent senator's office, only so many people depart Senate offices every month. That something happened that would have warranted her going to the police, that could become a scandal.
Right.
What happened? If it's the press, that's less likely to get picked up by the rest of the media. What's the follow-up story to that? There isn't one. And so you can imagine why her mother would not have wanted to talk about the police,
right.
Talk about specifically about sexual harassment or talk specifically about sexual assault. So what does it prove? It's unfair to say that it proves nothing. It doesn't prove that there was an assault. It buttresses her credibility because, her claim was that her mother called the Larry King Live show and talked about her issues with the Biden office. We can now confirm that claim is true. And it also confirms that she spoke with her mother about something that happened with the Biden office, and that her mother was disturbed enough by whatever she heard that she decided to make this phone call. And so you have an interesting situation where the Biden campaign is dug in, and you can understand why, on a flat out 100% denial of all aspects of these allegations, from her April 9th, 2019 ones all the way through to today. But a number of Biden supporters seem to be trending in a different direction, which is to say you know what? I actually do believe that Tara went through some type of sexual harassment in the office. It's that fits within Biden's, you know, character, right, as we've all seen on videos throughout, right, his entire career. And it fits with what, you know, she said, you know, it maps with what we see in this video, and also with what she, you know, her, she said in April 2019, what she's told her friend, what she told her brother. But they stop short and they say, okay, we'll acknowledge that that happened, but we don't believe that an assault happened. Sure. So for those people, you know, it's probably not going to do a lot to convince them, just as unearthing the actual complaint that she filed would similarly not do much for those people, because that complaint was about workplace harassment,
right,
and not the incident in the hallway.
Right. So, I mean, if people were honest, though, of course, this would go towards Biden's credibility or the Biden campaign's credibility, because as you point out, they're denying anything inappropriate was done. Marianne Baker made the unfortunate, for her own credibility, I would say, claim that she never witnessed anything inappropriate, not just with Tara Reid, but with between anyone. And I kind of don't know why she would say that, because anyone who's seen, right, footage of Biden knows that he's done inappropriate things. Sure, it's not sexual assault. It's not even necessarily sexual harassment. But the idea that the guy, that this guy who has done things on camera that are really weird, like, let's say, to be generous, to be charitable, violations of personal space.
Right.
The idea that he'd never done anything like that with other people is not credible.
Right.
And as you said, this does go to the credibility of the Biden campaign, which is, you know, circling the wagons. And it's also interesting that Biden himself has not denied it. He's only had his campaign deny it. And another interesting thing is that you had said to me during our interview where we mentioned this video, you that to you was kind of suggested a veracity, because it was such a weird, specific thing to mention. And had there been a transcript of all the episodes, which there now we know there was, but if it didn't exist, then someone could have easily looked through those and been like, no one ever called mentioning that. So it gives her much that credibility too. And then in terms of her remembering that her mom said more things than she said, again, Ryan's kids agree with me, by the way. They are outraged by this. But again, she knew what her mom was referring to. This was, you know, in the 90s. It makes sense too. She's not lying. She knew what she heard there was that it was in reference to this.
Right. And it's an interesting comment about the fallibility of our memories, the precision of our memories and their relationship to actual events. You know,
right.
So when she said, you know, I don't know what year she called Larry King, people could easily have said, you know, because she doesn't know the exact date of the incident in the hallway with Biden. People could say she doesn't know the year. You know, that's ridiculous. If she can't even tell you what year it is in an entire decade, how are we supposed to believe that it ever happened? Lo and behold, it did happen.
Right.
But she just, that's how
exactly
memory works. She just didn't remember exactly. And she also, like you said, she knew in her mind, in her heart, that what her mother was talking about was sexual harassment and retaliation, which is interesting. You know, that goes to show that her mother at that point was probably not calling in about this specific assault. And I think we can get into why that might have been. But so right, that would be why, you know, she remembered more precision in the call, because in her mind, you know, she understood that that's what was happening. But then you look at the actual transcript, that could even happen within an hour or two of a thing happening where you remember what somebody said slightly differently. Like if we had stenographers who went around with us and typed up our conversations that we were having with people and then read them back to us, you know, a couple hours later, we'd often be surprised about exactly what was said. Certainly people who are having fights with each other,
right,
would love to have these stenographers, but then would be shocked to find, oh, wait, I did say,
yeah,
that thing.
Yeah, totally.
You said I was denying saying. But on the question of the assault, So, and whether that's precisely what she was referring to, or whether she was kind of putting them all together in one big basket, which we just can't know. I could imagine that, you know, she had urged her to go to the police about the assault. Tara at the time, you know, told me, and I think told you too, that in the moment or immediately afterwards, you know, it wasn't until she talked to her mother, right, that she processed it as an assault. You know, right in the aftermath, she did that very typical thing, which is to say, what did I do wrong? Right. You know, what on earth did I do to bring this on to myself, getting right into that kind of toxic discourse of where people blame, you know, where women blame themselves for, you know, for things that men do. And so, you know, once she refused to take her mother's advice and, you know, go to the police about this, you could see her mother saying, okay, well, I've lost that fight.
Right.
But what about this sexual harassment in the workplace fight? Like this, you know, he just oversaw the hearings that confirmed Clarence Thomas, you know, in the face of Anita Hill's extraordinarily damning sexual harassment testimony. And here he is running an office himself that has a hostile culture. Like, isn't that something that you would want to push to the press? So you could see that maybe that's the angle that she was trying to go after she had failed to get Tara to go to the police about the assault. Or if you were committed to it, you could say, you know, what's true is that there was harassment, and that whether Tara is lying or believes it, that the assault just simply didn't happen. And I'm going to choose to not believe that, but I will believe this other half of it. But like I said, that's not the path that the Biden campaign is right taking. They're saying that it's all made up.
Yeah, exactly. So people, different Biden supporters can rationalize things in their minds, but the thing is that they probably rationalized the Biden campaign just full out denying everything.
Right.
Yeah, but it is very frustrating and demoralizing and problematic when people smearing Tara because they either don't want to get into what the Biden campaign is actually doing, or because they don't want to grapple with publicly say, you know, the priority is to defeat Trump. And what right. can you talk about what Biden did during the Anita Hill, during the confirmation, that people find objectionable?
Well, there was a lot, and there's at least one really good documentary about it, some good books about it. But the main thing would be that he wouldn't allow other witnesses who would have corroborated and backed up what Anita Hill was saying about Clarence Thomas. He just left Anita Hill kind of hanging out there all alone, which is ironic in the sense that, you know, post Me Too, the gold standard now, or if it's even a gold standard, the silver standard at least, for corroborating allegations is, you know, who did you tell at the time,
right,
and what is the credibility of the people that you told at the time, told people contemporaneously about an allegation. And Anita Hill had people who were willing to you know, testify about their own experiences with Clarence Thomas, and also that, you know, that they were aware of hers in real time. And Biden wouldn't allow those women to testify, which, you know, made it very difficult for Hill's, you know, story to gain the purchase that it would have needed for her not to be, you know, vilified nationally. And so that's the main thing, you know, just in general, it was heavily stacked in favor of Clarence Thomas. I think there's a great, you could skip the entire documentary and go watch the Saturday Night Live coverage of it, where they just, you know, grill and/or ignore Anita Hill. Mm. And then Clarence Thomas comes on and it's just, hey, you know, hey, bud, you know, how's it going? You know, give him a pass.
Right.
And a backslap on the way out.
There have been charges by Professor Hill that you talked casually with her about graphic scenes in porno movies. Is that true?
Yes, it is.
And did that work? Did it break the ice?
No, Senator, it actually offended her.
What porno movie did you talk about?
Well, I mainly spoke about a favorite of mine called the Hind Lick Maneuver.
That's a good movie, George. But do you think hardcore porno is the way to go? Because I feel women prefer softer porn.
Senator Thurman?
I agree with Senator Heffin. Yeah, that's right. The women like something with more stories and costumes. It'll transport them to another place in time. That's right. Their inhibitions are often loosened by escape when they are allowed to fantasize in another air. Women don't like close-ups or oversized genitalia. That's just never gonna turn them on.
Another good thing is to get them out on your boat for some reason. Because then it's really hard for them to get away.
And then Biden refused to apologize. He kind of acknowledged that he had not been the best advocate for Anita Hill, but in his Biden-esque way, still has refused to apologize.
Right. He sort of claimed that he apologized, which Anita Hill had been asking for decades. And he claimed right as he launched presidential campaign that he had done so. But it turned out he had apologized for the way that she was treated by the committee. And she said, well, you know, you were the chairman of the committee.
Right.
So he kind of acted as if he was apologizing on behalf of other people. And he has, and I think it was actually in response to Anita Hill, where he told a reporter, you know, I'll never apologize for anything.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't have that quote exactly right, but it's very close to I will never apologize for anything I've ever done.
It's okay, because you don't have to. I mean, the distance between what he said and what you're saying is so much closer than so much shorter than the distance between anything Biden ever says and the truth. I mean, that's the other thing that people aren't looking at, is like, this is a guy who lies his way through a debate.
Right.
Why aren't they examining his credibility or taking that into account? And I guess I think we know why. And, you know, this memory issue that you referred to before, this is really significant, because someone actually DM'd me and said, and thanked me for interviewing Tara, and said that she, as a teenager, she and her friend were kidnapped and raped, and they dropped the charges or stopped the investigation because she and the friend had somewhat conflicting memories about it. And again, we live what the Me Too movement was supposed to do and claims to do, and still does for some, in some cases, I guess, when you're not accusing a Democrat, is acknowledges how much people's memories are vague or fuzzy, or, you know, people don't get all the details right. And I understand, it's actually very dangerous, because I get how if you don't really understand that, and our culture needs to, and society needs to do a better job of revealing how understandable and common this is. But if you don't understand that, and you see people say one thing and then another thing that contradicts it, like, I don't think people are sensitive enough to how memory works, especially when it's a traumatic event.
Right. And the pendulum swung so far, you know, in the direction of believe women, that it has made a kind of a nuanced conversation about the situation effectively impossible. And it kind of, interestingly, you know, handcuffs some feminists who want to be more critical of Tara Reid than they are, or they want to be more precise in what their criticism is and why they don't believe her. But there are taboos around, you know, what you can say about a person's background or their motivations or their mental health or anything else that leave them kind of just speaking in very vague generalities about why they don't believe all of Tara Reid's story. And so that leaves people who do believe her to conclude that, well, it must be partisan. You know, it right. must be because you support Joe Biden. And a lot of the women are kind of left and feminist men who are kind of on the other side and defending Biden are left without an ability to kind of, you know, interrogate in a serious way her claims, because they'll be, you know, called out for violating the norms that have been established by the Me Too movement. Yet, you know, paradoxically, they're undermining those norms by not being able to have that conversation. And it's the entire thing has been, you know, extraordinarily destructive to the entire Me Too project.
Right. And so that's why I think they tried to go hard after me and after you, because that was their way of kind of, not very convincingly, but, you know, saying, oh, it's just that the way it was broken was irresponsible. The way the story came out was irresponsible. They couldn't really do that with you, which is why most people didn't mention that, because you had just done, because you didn't, you broke, as we mentioned before, you broke the story the way you broke the Christine Blasey Ford story, which was that you broke a story on an allegation without getting into the allegation too much. And then, but of course, in the case of Christine Blasey Ford, everyone immediately started covering it. And you know, it's just a disingenuous argument, because let's say for argument's sake, I totally messed up the interview. I totally, you know, made life miserable for Tara Reid. Okay, then fine. Then go interview her and do a story.
Right.
Yeah. And
right. So,
yeah.
Right. Survivors, right. Survivors very rightly have been elevated over the past several years, but they've been elevated to a place where the supporters of Biden feel like they can't directly, the more prominent supporters feel like they can't directly come after them. And so, right, they come after, you know, more particularly you, or they come after Bernie bros, you know, who are supporting Tara rather than going after her. Now, the less sophisticated, more aggressive kind of rank and file Biden supporters that you'll find online, you know, they will actually go directly after Tara, whether it's in her DMs or on Twitter or whatever else. They don't have the same compunction, because they're not trying to follow the norms that were established around the movement.
I mean, Joan Walsh was, and Michelle Goldberg were pretty surprisingly, it was kind of honest, although with Walsh, I would say it was honestly dishonest or dishonestly. I don't know. Like Walsh didn't hide. I mean, she did call me a diehard Bernie fan in the opening of her piece. But she said, you know, Tara's troubling accusations or a troubling tale. I mean, she just went for it, just saying why it wasn't, you know, reliable. And Michelle Goldberg said if Tara Reid had been as inconsistent, if Blasey Ford had been as inconsistent as Tara Reid, she wouldn't have been the cause celeb that she is. How do their consistencies compare?
Right, and I thought Michelle's column was a lot more fair.
Yeah.
And I also thought that she had one of the more interesting lines that's been written about this entire saga, which was that, I think it was her opening line was something like, it would be easier to know what to make of the Tara Reid allegations if there were more facts to support them, or if there were less.
Yeah.
Like in other words, it's in this unsweet spot of having enough corroboration and credibility that it's quite easy to see it happening and to believe it, while also leaving enough room for doubt that if you don't want to believe it, you can also not believe it. The assault part, the harassment seems like an open and shut case for the most part. The contradictions that people refer to, one, you know, she came out in April 2019 with, you know, backing up Lucy Flores' story about, know, Lucy Flores had said that he kind of like rubbed her shoulders in an awkward way and kissed the back of her head
and inhales,
a long way, and right as she's about to go on stage, and just a very Biden-esque thing to do, which he then flatly denied, which is like, come on, like, are you serious? Like, why, like, you do that sort of thing? And like, we've seen it. You've seen you do it. We haven't seen you do it to Lucy Flores, but the idea that you didn't is she's just completely fabricating it. Weird. So Tara came out with that particular element of her story that, yes, he did that to me. And her friend remembered her talking about him running his fingers through the big curls of her her hair and like stroking her neck. And so she came out with that story. The fact that she didn't come out with the other part of it is a major thing that's used against her. Say, okay, you know, now that it looks like Biden's going to be the nominee, all of a sudden you've got this new story. Now there's, like with everything, there are explanations for the way that you can come out. The way that Tara kind of engages with people on Twitter in a kind of combative way is something that you could use to say, well, this whole thing just is too messy. Like, I don't, like, it just, something doesn't feel right here. That's just nowhere near the way that somebody like Christine Blasey Ford, was going about it at the time. You know, she was allowing other people to go out and, fight online,
which speaks to the kind of class element and the behavioral aesthetic element of this, right? So just backing up a little bit about the not revealing everything at the same time, as Tara told me and the friend says in the interview I did with her, because a lot of people are like, why didn't she come forward when Obama was elected? And her daughter was a teenager. And Tara has said she would never do like anything that would have made her daughter's life more difficult. She also felt conflicted about it. She really liked Obama. But I think the main thing was that she wasn't going to come forward while her daughter was a teenager.
Right.
But in terms of, and it's funny because both Tara remembers that her friend told her, Tara was really mad when she saw The View, Whoopi Goldberg and Joy Behar totally like smear Lucy Flores. They didn't even deny it happened. They were just like, why don't you say something at the time?
Right.
But she says what really made her think about going forward was her friend calling her up and saying, you know, one of the criticisms people are making of Flores and one of the pro-Biden arguments they're making is that no one who worked for him ever complained about this stuff. And that's what made Tara come forward. Now, there's a maybe it's because I'm a woman. I don't know. To me, it makes so much sense that you come forward more quickly and more easily about inappropriate behavior, about having someone run their fingers up your, you know, under your hair, then an assault that you have, like, that to me, it's like, it's not changing your story. It's revealing more of it. And as Anthony Zenkis, who is a psychologist, he says, in the sexual violence advocacy community, it is well understood that survivors take time to tell their full stories. While I was a director of an advocacy agency, a young girl who was sexually abused by a male relative told police he fondled her above her clothing. Months later, she spoke about the penetration. This is typical for victims of trauma. Rarely does the story come out all at once. And what he links to, interestingly enough, is an article called Why Women Can Take Years to Come Forward with Sexual Assault Allegations. And the article was written by Shayla Dewan at the New York Times, because of the Christine Blasey Ford controversy. I mean, there seems to be a kind of coordinated talking point listicle where that actually this guy Jeremy Fassler from the Daily Banter kind of unwittingly revealed, I think. He had, when this story came out, he had like six reasons that people shouldn't trust, why this story should not be trusted. And they were because of who broke the story, but at the same time, they said that you didn't break the Blasey Ford story, because people like me were pushing it, because Sean King was pushing it, because of her Russia stuff, and because Trump raped a lot of people, has been accused of raping a lot of people. Then he did this thing There's video of a woman on Dr. Phil claiming that she was Putin's fiance, but take that with a grain of salt as it may not be true. And that was something Amanda Marcotte also said, although she said she's absolutely not her. And that was going around a lot. A lot of people on Twitter, pro-Biden people on Twitter, were releasing that and then saying, oh, wait, well, actually, that may not be her, which seemed weird. Like, it seemed like a weird coincidental, like, line to be towing. I don't know what you thought about that.
Right. So that was weird, that Dr. Phil thing. It didn't last terribly long because it was 100% false, but that was something that was going around. And that flowed from her Putin stuff. And, you know, when I first spoke to her, she said, when I came out in April, I was accused of being an agent of Vladimir Putin. And I thought, oh my, that's absurd. It's ridiculous that, everybody has to suffer through this Russiagate hysteria. And then I looked up what she had written, and I was like, oh, this is wild that you actually did write pieces hailing the virtues of Vladimir Putin.
Right.
Now, of course, that doesn't make you a Russian agent, and it probably proves that you're certainly not one,
right,
because Russian agents don't out themselves on
right.
Medium. But it certainly would allow people to raise credibility questions,
yeah,
like what is this wackiness about
right.
the glories of the Russian Federation and Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
But Tara Reid is not the perfect victim, and like you said earlier, the Me Too movement was organized around the principle that somebody doesn't need to be a perfect victim to be a victim, and that an assailant does not get out of jail free just because their victim doesn't have perfection status.
Right.
And I think another problem that people have here goes back to the class question, that if you don't have a lot of experience interacting with and socializing with working class people, a lot of these behaviors might strike you as unusual. Whereas if you socialize with upper middle class, well educated people, then Christine Blasey Ford is your kind of ideal type of person who's going to give testimony about their assault. But if you do understand working class people, then a lot of this stuff makes fits with the way that people are. We're a big messy country with a lot of eccentricities, and that goes triple for Northern California.
Right.
So as it intersects and interacts with establishment media grappling with the question of credibility, it results in kind of some failures to translate.
Yeah, it's funny. Tara has told me that her class background it was like up and down, kind of the way her family was.
Which is also very American.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, I can't believe people use the fact that she filed for bankruptcy as at all incriminating. And it was like 2012, a pretty understandable time for that. But it would have been fine if it, whatever year it was. But I actually think it's that Tara is like kind of an artsy hippie. Her mom was an artist. I think if she were really wealthy, then she would be, what's that joke? What's the difference between eccentric and crazy? $1 million, just want to know, what background do you come from? Like, class wise.
I grew up poor on the, Eastern Shore of Maryland, which is a really rural, really rural part of the state. My brother and I raised by a single mom, on public benefits. And we were kind of poor in a poor area. Like, the other poor people thought we were poor. I've had a lot of experience, interacting with working class, people.
And have you seen that in your reporting in other areas, like a kind of lack of exposure, affecting the way people judge stories or judge people or report on things?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. With Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, actually, because so my father lived in, was a school psychologist from Allentown, Pennsylvania, and my brother and I would go visit him on weekends, spend a lot of time with him in the summer. And he, you know, he lived a very middle class, and still does live a very middle class life in Allentown. And so, you know, we were able to experience like what middle class life was like, as well as what lower class life was like, which then gives you a different perspective on your daily life, because you see, you know, that there's something different. And Ocasio-Cortez experienced that. You know, her family moved from the Bronx to Yorktown when she was five, but then every weekend and a lot of time in the summer, they would spend in the Bronx. And so, you know, a lot of people, you know, when they learned that she went to Yorktown High School, would say, oh, well, she's a total fraud. Like this, you know, she doesn't understand, the working class experience. You know, this is utter fabrication just to further some political ends. Well, no, it's like America is a much messier place than that. And Tara Reid's, you know, up and down experience is also very common. Like a lot of, an extraordinary number of people, maybe it might be more than 80%, you know, experience some amount of poverty in their lives and experience some amount of wealth in their lives. And, you know, we have a static number of people who are in poverty and growing as of today. But the precise people who are in that class are moving in and out all the time. And that's just not something that people kind of are willing to incorporate into their idea of what America is or who people are.
Right. It's funny. I wrote in this Guardian piece, I didn't, for various reasons, I didn't want to be the person to first interview her, but no one else was, and I was trying to like ask people to interview her, and I thought that it should come out. And I, one of the reasons I didn't want it was because I didn't want people to think that I was doing this like some nefarious plot. Like the story was brought to me and I thought it should go out and it was unfair. And it's like, it's annoying because I am very pro Sanders. And now there's all this stuff going on with Sanders being, you know, on the ballot or being trying to remove him. And I feel kind of hamstrung, but whatever, I'll just be honest about it. What I think is frustrating is that all these other people who are supporting Biden or doubting Tara and include the fact that I'm a big Bernie Sanders supporter, don't include the fact that they're big Bernie Sanders critics.
Right. Yes.
You know, and like, yeah, all supportive Warren or now are definitely supporting Biden or supported Biden over Bernie. And I just think that the danger isn't in people who own their ideology. The danger is the people who don't. And we saw in the Washington Post and the New York Times, like, it is just indefensible that they took that long to report on it. And then it's indefensible that they took out a clause of a sentence because the Biden campaign wanted them to. And the only thing that's somewhat helpful about it is that the executive editor of the New York Times is either out of touch enough to admit that happened or had like a brain fart. I don't know what it is, but it's very frustrating that to me, that's the story about bias, is that you have these pseudo, apparently objective outlets that are really not objective.
Right, and as you and I know, you know, one reason you went with it is, you know, Tara very much wanted this story out. This was, you know, I've seen people who've accused you of kind of like drawing it out of her. Encouraging her or forcing her onto the record, you know, that couldn't be further from the truth. You know, she had decided that she was going to stand on her truth, as she said, and she was going to tell this story. And whether it was you or me or somebody else, she was going to tell this. And so there was no world in which this wasn't coming out. The Biden supporters, you know, might want to think about, you know, how this would affect the campaign if it had come out in the late summer or the fall, if and it would have been met with furious denials, then the Larry King video would have shown up, whether it's mid-October. And then all of a sudden you've got weeks of coverage around this question. You know, probably better for the Biden campaign to actually, sort this out however they're planning to sort it out in April and May rather than September, October, November. So, you know, some people who think that that they're helping their preferred candidate may not actually be doing so, because we don't have omniscience about what the actual results are going to be of the things that we do in the world.
Right. That's actually true, because I keep thinking like this would have been Trump's October surprise. But it's true that because she tried to come out starting in April, because the male journalist she was talking to, she didn't feel comfortable telling him everything. And he wasn't particularly sensitive to, you know, I don't think he had experience reporting on sexual assault issues. And she wrote to all these journalists, and she's shown me the emails. She wrote to people at the New York Times, at NPR, all the kind of usual suspects in this area. She wrote to politicians. She would have come out in April. And then, as we know, she was trying to come out in January when Time's Up declined to help her. So I didn't think of it that way, though, which is that had she come out earlier, it probably would have killed him as the nominee.
I mean, it probably would have, but then if it comes out much later, it could kill him in the general election.
Yeah, exactly, right.
So so he may have lucked into the I'm sure it doesn't feel like this
sweet
at the
spot.
Moment,
right?
But the spot where it doesn't derail his nomination or his general election chances.
Right, and people are. I mean, Peter Dow, in fact, said that Biden should step down and drop out. Biden was trending. I of course feel like I don't even want to go there, because I don't want to give people ammo. And I'm not really conflicted. I think he should. I think it's outrageous that. I also think that he's such a bad candidate, and I think that people who like him are so ideologically attached to him that they don't realize what a bad candidate he is. And let's see, any final stuff that you want to make sure we address? I'm really grateful that you took the time to.
Yeah, I think one thing people should think about is what they can do to kind of help salvage the Me Too movement as it's going through this difficult time. Like a lot of defenders of Biden's online seem to be willing to sacrifice it. I saw somebody today saying, this wouldn't hold up in a court of law,
right?
Which is just parroting the talking points that were used to defend Kavanaugh. Like the whole point of the Me Too movement is that this is not it's not a court of law. And so if some of Biden's defenders aren't going to stand up for the Me Too movement, I think Tara Reid's defenders need to figure out what they can do to make sure that it isn't destroyed in just because some of the more kind of prominent advocates of the Me Too movement aren't behaving in a way that is beneficial to that movement in this moment. In other words, to be careful not to discredit the entire project around survivors' rights and survivors' justice, just because some people are using this this moment in an irresponsible way. And I'm still trying to think through what exactly that could look like. But I do think it's important that that the right wing not be allowed to kind of use this to basically erase all of the progress that was made over the last three years.
Right. And as you said, I mean, the criminal court stuff, it wouldn't stand up in criminal court. Like, that's precisely why Me Too was the movement was founded, was because their criminal justice system is not equipped to deal with this for many reasons. I mean, people don't come forward to police. It's hard to basically, this is a way of trying to you know, you default believe women. Of course, it doesn't mean you women have like a blank check to be believed, despite, you know, no matter what they're saying. But it's precisely because things like this may not stand up to in a criminal court that that Me Too exists.
Right. So I just hope that people don't just throw the entire Me Too movement out with some cynical Biden defenders.
Right. And last thing is you tweeted something about how, can you just go through the chronology of how this clip came out? And you found the transcript, but then how did the video pop up?
Oh, so this is interesting. I found the transcript. It would have cost $3,500 apparently to license it from CNN. I actually just got a response to my inquiry today. Of course, I'm not going to go forward with that because it's already out.
Right.
So the Media Research Center posted it, you know, relatively shortly after my article came out. They're a kind of right-wing, media oppo
right.
Center. And my assumption, which I think was incorrect, was that they were sitting on this video and they were waiting for an opportune moment to drop it. They've told me that they launched their project in the late 1980s and have basically VHS tapes and CDs of any media that was broadcast from the late 1980s up through today. And so that once I identified the date
right.
Of the show and the title of it, they were able to then go into their, I guess they sent somebody down wearing a mask into the basement, went and found the tape, found the, at that point, it's easy to find it.
They
uploaded it.
Yeah.
But so we do know it like they had access to it. CNN obviously has it in their archives as well. It was found quite easily once somebody thought to use Nexus transcripts,
right.
which somebody would have between now and the election.
Right.
And, you know, if this kind of thing had come out in October, it's probably a lot more damaging.
Than
now.
And has anyone said to you, why are you doing this? Why are you helping Trump?
Oh, sure. Sure. A lot of people say that, which, you know, I don't want to help. I don't want to help Trump.
Right.
I will. Tara has said the same thing. She doesn't want to see Trump elected.
Right.
I don't want to see Trump elected.
Yeah.
You know, I can't take into consideration the kind of political implications of a story and still call myself a journalist.
Yeah.
I'm not an activist. I'm a reporter. And so, the minute I start, you know, sitting on something that I consider to be newsworthy purely for the out of political concern, then I stop being a journalist.
Right. And ironically, I mean, again, this is not your intention, but ironically, I was saying I deserve one of those like pink pussy hats because ironically, I may be running interference. We may have run interference for the Biden campaign because they can deal with it now.
They'll never believe that. But maybe some of them actually would quietly understand that.
Yeah, I know they should invite us to his inauguration if he. I don't think he'll win. But some breaking news, by the way, a former neighbor. This is from Rich McHugh, who has also interviewed Tara and broke the news about her filing a police report. Rich McHugh, who was Ronan Farrow's producer, wrote just now in. Business Insider, a former neighbor of Joe Biden's accuser, Tara Reid, has come forward to corroborate her sexual assault account, saying Reid discussed the allegations in detail in the mid-1990s. Did you, I don't know if you saw this. Tara Reid, a former staffer in Joe Biden's, well, we know that. Now Reid's former neighbor, Linda Lacasse, a Biden supporter, tells Insider that Reid told her about the alleged assault in detail in 1995 or 1996. This happened, I know it did, because I remember talking about it. A former colleague of Reid's also told Insider that Reid talked in the mid-1990s of being sexually harassed by her former boss in Washington, D.C. The women came forward just days after the video emerged of a woman that Reed says is her mother calling into CNN's Larry King Live in 1993 to talk about her daughter's problems. Pretty interesting, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not advising the Biden campaign, but if I were, you know, I think that they just have to find a way to move past this and stop these, you know, stop the kind of attempts to discredit her story. Obviously, he's not going to, you know, admit to the assault or the incident in the hallway, but you know, by keeping it an open question like this, you're going to just continue to have a drip, drip, drip on the one hand of people questioning Tara's credibility and her background, and a drip, drip, drip on the other hand of reporters unearthing more corroborating evidence. So, you know, it's something that they need to figure out. Maybe, you know, I think what Tara wants is an apology. She wants a recognition, you know, that that she was wronged, and that this wasn't her fault, and that there's regret and remorse, and maybe there's some way to get to that place and get them, to resolve this, because as we've seen, she told her brother, she told her mother, she told her friend. Now we know she told a neighbor. You know, there may end up being, you know, more people that that emerge.
Right.
And now you have somebody who says she's a Biden supporter, and which I think is, in the general election, it doesn't matter who I vote for.
Right.
Because I live in Washington, D.C., and the Democrats win by 90 points.
Right.
But, you know, I don't view voting as an act of of morality. It's not an end in itself. It is a means, you know, towards something else. And so if somebody, both believes that Biden did this and votes for Biden, I don't actually see any contradiction in that. And I'm sure tens of millions of people will actually fit into that category.
Right. I mean, I think it lends credibility to her, honestly, because she doesn't have an ideological axe to grind, obviously, this person. I mean, Liza Featherstone, on an episode that I still have to release, but I've been interviewing a lot of people, but Liza Featherstone, who wrote, and we didn't get time to talk about this, but you have kids running around, and also you're a busy journalist, so I really am grateful that you've taken this time, and I'll let you go in a second, but she... she wrote about this in the interim when Bernie Sanders was still a nominee. Liza wrote about this, Liza Featherstone. And now her position is, yeah, we have to defeat Trump. Like, obviously, just vote for Biden. I'm okay with her saying that because she actually wrote about it when there was another nominee in the race. I'm not okay with, like, the quote-unquote feminist who didn't say anything while there was another nominee in the race, then kind of, like, trying to shame people into voting for Biden. Although I think it's fine to vote for Biden, I just think that they don't have the, you know, authority to say that.
Right. If they would acknowledge that it happened, they'd,
right,
they'd
exactly
paradoxically have more authority.
Right.
To then make that argument.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Ryan, and next time you're on, we're going to have to talk about your book, but I want everyone to know it's a great book. We got people. I'll encourage people to buy it. And people can find your latest piece at The Intercept. They can also find you on Twitter where?
Just my name, Ryan Grimm.
Okay, great. All right, awesome. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Bye, Ryan. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to The Katie Halper Show. Remember, you can support The Katie Halper Show on Patreon. That's patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. Again, that's patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. Rate and review us on iTunes. And all of the interviews I'm doing around Tara or with Tara I'm not putting any of them behind the Patreon wall because I don't want to monetize this project. And I also, of course, want everyone to be able to hear my interviews with or about her, because as you may have noticed, the entire rest of the media, besides, to be fair, the right-wing media, but no one takes that seriously who's not on the right wing, has been giving this any fair coverage.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.